Thank you, operator. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the call of the RFP3 subgroup of the Cross-Community Working Group on IANA Stewardship Transition on January 16th, 2015, at least for most of us. And I would like to begin with a roll call in our usual fashion.
Great. Thank you, Greg. As per usual, we'll do roll call based on the Adobe Connect room. If anyone is on the audio line only and hasn't connected to the Adobe Connect yet, can you please just say your name now, and we'll record that in the notes. Okay. Seeing as there's no one, it seems like we'll go with the 21 participants we currently have in the Adobe Connect room. Thank
There's
you.
There's also Olivier Crépin-Ablon as well, and I'll be in the Adobe Connect in a moment. Thank you.
Thank you, Olivier.
Okay, then, why don't we get started? As you'll see from my note last night, I looked at three potential kind of documents at which to start this call. There are, at this point, quite a number of alternative paths that could be taken just logistically. It occurred to me that what we should do is, at this point, what I'd like to do is use all three of those documents, not simultaneously, but use all three of those documents to try to drill down on the concept of a customer standing committee. And by using all three documents, what I'd like to do is to go through this document in front of you and then move to the CSC portions of the other two documents, looking at the areas of divergence from the survey, and especially what one of our more statistically inclined colleagues identified as bimodal divergence, where there seemed to be a couple of convergences forming, but not a single convergence. See what we can do to try to resolve some of those differences. So let's try to start quickly on the top of this document. I know we have been to this document somewhat before, but if we can start on this and see what we can do to identify areas where there may be changes that could be supported more broadly, and also any tweaks that could be made to try to drive forward on this, and also we can use this time to focus on any issues that any would like to bring up at this time about each of these elements of the CSC structure. Alan Greenberg, I see your hand is up.
My hand is up in error because I'm trying to make the rest of my computer work. Sorry.
No problem. Well, why don't we begin with the entity status? I somewhat regret actually using or having put into this document the term working group, in the sense that that is has a lot of particular meaning within ICANN. And may even have, you know, variant meanings in different parts of ICANN. But I think the point is that it's not a legal entity or an incorporated association. It's essentially a form of a committee. So I'll open the floor if there are any comments on this issue or questions. Thank you. anybody who finds this wonderful or absurd or objectionable, or Alan Greenberg, your hand is up.
This time it's up for real. Typically the word committee is used as a committee of something. I'm sure that's not in the formal definition, but nevertheless, when you're referring, you know, let's pretend we're referring to it in a document. If we just call it the CSC, you know, or the Customer Standing Committee, what's to prevent, you know, Greg from creating his own Customer Standing Committee and saying, I'm the CSC you're referring to? You know, normally there's some context in which a group exists. And I have a bit of a problem with this one and later on with the MRT in a similar sense of definitively identifying it and coming to an agreement with it that it does what we want when it is not something that exists in a legal sense.
Right. Well, I think that's a good point, Alan. And I think that to some extent, we might begin to look for answers to that question when we look at the organizational documentation and the concept of a charter, which maybe gets us the question of chartered by whom. So it may be that this is a committee that is chartered by all of the various entities that are represented on this call. Maybe additional entities also charter it or subscribe to the charter in some fashion so that it gains its legitimacy, its internal legitimacy, if you will, from essentially the agreement of the various stakeholder groups, ACs, and perhaps expert groups and other entities that may exist outside of ICANN per se, such as RIRs. And as I see Robert mentioned, there are several CCTLDs that aren't in the CCNSO, so there would need to be some vehicle, whether as a unit or singly, they sign on to, in essence, recognize the CC, the Customer Standing Committee. And then on the other side, there would need to be elements by which they're linked to doing the job they do with regard to ICANN, so ICANN would need to recognize them, and that would, at least under, say, the Frankfurt proposal, be something that's set forth in the contract.
Yeah, just one further on, and then I'll put my hand down. I think we still have some problem here because we spent a lot of time the other day talking about credentials for CSC members, for instance. Who does the vetting? Is this a group that simply self-vets, in which case its composition becomes self-determining and can change what it's doing and what it decides as it goes along. So I'm still uncomfortable, but I'll be quiet now.
Oh, no. I think the issue of credentials, I think, to some extent would get resolved in the charter in the sense that, you know, certain qualifications and expectations could be set forth in there. The question of who meets those qualifications and who decides whether what they are met or not is a little...
Besides, if the charter is being followed.
Yes, exactly. You know, is that the CSC itself? Is it the MRT? And if so, don't you have the same issues with the MRT? And if so, who decides that? All legitimate questions. And even if you get somewhat closer through the use of a agreed-upon charter and some sort of form of a credentialing process, to some extent, you know, in the multi-stakeholder model, there is a certain level of an honor system and also statements of interest and the like. But ultimately, we're all, to some extent, relying on each other to to act reasonably in accordance with the process. Stefan, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, Greg. In order to further emphasize this role of CSC as an operational organization, we might and also emphasize its role as limited to technical management. We could use Avery's idea from before Christmas and looking further into the idea of having a ITFI-ISOC relation. So it's core operational, whereas some other organization, the MRT, for example, would be more in a legal sense responsible for the business. So is that something to put into the legal advice, maybe?
Yes, and I think that keeping the CSC limited to, I would call it technical and operational oversight, certainly, you know, makes sense and makes it more kind of self-evident what people should be doing and what kinds of people maybe should be doing it. I think there's, I'm not sure what were you, maybe you or even Avery could kind of flesh out what you were thinking about with IETF and ISOC.
Sorry, I was on mute there. Well, the relation between ITF and the ISOC that is interesting. ITF is a process. It's not an organization per se, whereas ISOC is the legal home of the ITF. And maybe this idea could be used also in the relation between CSC and the MRT. And that's what the legal advice could maybe clarify for us, if it's possible, to this extent as well.
Right, I see what you're saying, to kind of replicate that relationship with either ISOC or perhaps another entity that is legal, you know, legally recognized.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I don't know an awful lot about the relationship between the IETF and ISOC. On the IETF website, it says it's an organized activity of ISOC, which from a legal point of view, which is by far not the only point of view, is kind of meaningless. I guess it means it's kind of it, but not in it. Not quite sure. Although certainly, if the internet community has been comfortable with that for a long time, there is something to be said for that. But I think, as one of our commentators said, I'll paraphrase slightly. Looking at this solely from kind of a view of law and policy is not the doesn't get us to the end result any more than looking at it solely from a technical engineering point of view.
Will get us to the right
result, and kind of the essence of the multi-stakeholder model is different points of view trying to coalesce around common goals and ends. Avery, your hand is up.
Well, isn't that the elegance of it?
Or Stefan, is that a new hand ahead of Avery?
No. Stefan, please continue. I'll come in later if you want.
Well, my point was, isn't that the elegance of it, that the ITF is, in legal terms, defined away from the operational or legal dimensions of it, and that's what I thought we might consider as a solution, because the work of the ITF is quite significant when you talk about technical terms. So maybe this is the bridge that we might use.
Right.
Yes, this is Avery. If I can continue and build on that, and hopefully I'm a little easier to hear than I was before. If not, let me know and I'll play with the game some more.
Avery, you sound great.
Thank you. At the IETF is completely independent in regard to the work it does. ISOC has no input, no mechanism other than as individuals participating to say anything about what happens at the IETF. It has all its internal mechanisms. It picks people. You know, it has strictly strict definitions of how to select its leadership, how to eliminate its leadership. So it's totally self-contained, and I'm not saying we need all that in the CSE, but we would need some sort of, these are the rules by which members are vetted. These are the rules by which they are replaced. These are the methods that they use to work. Those would be internal to the CSE, and whatever organization served as an umbrella would have no authority to basically command what happens in that bubble. Now, the IETF relationship to the Internet Society does include the fourth step in their appeals chain, being to appeal a process decision to the ISOC board, et cetera, kind of the only thing we can do with the ICANN board. So I think there were ideas that looked at this and even looked at the notion of, yes, it needs to be independent, for example, of ICANN, but if such an idea could be crafted at ICANN, of ICANN serving as an organizational umbrella for a strictly defined independent activity, perhaps, yes, it could possibly hang under ISOC, but there might be other complications in that doing. And, of course, we have no idea whether ISOC would be willing to take something like this. You know, others have suggested it could hang under ISTAR. That's more difficult because they aren't a corporate entity that can provide that umbrella. But in my view, it could possibly even hang under ICANN as long as it had that very, very strict separation of authority for the operational task. Thank you.
Thank you, Aubrey. Let me throw out a question to you in the first instance, but others as well. Given the independence that is inherent in the relationship of ISOC and the IETF, could CSC, to use your term, hang under ICANN and be independent of it and yet supported by it in kind of ministerial terms? That might also solve some of the funding issues. I'll let you go. Thanks.
Oh, sorry. That was the point exactly that I was making. But yes, if we define it strictly enough and if the relationship with ICANN could be defined strictly enough, I mean, yeah, then yes, I see that as one of the possibilities.
Thank you, Ari. I think that's something worth exploring because one of the things, as we all evolve, trying to become comfortable with structures that aren't necessary, that are well understood or reasonably well understood in the Internet community that may not make a lawyer just wandering in from the outside, and I didn't wander in from the outside. I've been at this for about 7 to 10 years, depending upon how you count my ICANN relationship, but trying to impose kind of lawyerly ideas on everything, you know, doesn't work. When the law has to be involved, that may make sense, but it could be that borrowing from an idea that is well regarded, could actually work. Martin Boyd.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. I'm feeling a little bit lost, so I've got one question as well as then some comments. My question is, for the purpose of this exercise, are we assuming that the role, which I think really has to come first before we start looking at the status and relationships of the organization, is the role we're assuming that which was based in the document that you circulated this morning? My second point was that it seemed to me, on looking at these various papers, that the role of the CSC was primarily to represent or to provide a vehicle for representation between the registries and the IANA functions operator. because it's when that relationship breaks down that you're going to need to start looking about how do you repair that relationship. Now, in that case, I wouldn't particularly see the CSC necessarily as having to have any form of legal status. It's just an organizationally recognized body, which I think would sort the argument of an organized activity of. The other thing was that it could be just treated like any other committee within ICANN, where in fact the committees are themselves independent of ICANN or the board of ICANN. But more specifically, it occurs to me that it could usefully be a committee of the IANA functions operator and move with the IANA functions operator if the IANA functions operator needs to be changed. But that way it has a very specific and close entity with the IANA functions operator, and therefore becomes better placed to address issues with the IANA function operator. Anyway, it's just a thought, but it still seems to me that better to know what the thing is going to do and then decide how to design it so that you can do that to the best rather than to design it and then force it into being able to resolve the problems that are put its way. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Points well taken. Try to take those points briefly. First, I would say that for the sake of this discussion, that the role of the CSC as set forth in the draft proposal would be the starting assumption. You know, we have done functional analyses before, not in depth of the CSC, but we've often, as we said on numerous calls in different ways, form follows function and structure follows function. But I think we do have at least some idea of the and a reasonable idea of the function of the CSC. I would take some issue or point of difference on it being essentially a conduit for the registry operators to deal with the IANA functions operator. I think it needs to be more than that. We did have support, strong support, for it being predominantly registry operators, since it is a customer committee, but that support tended to diminish sharply when it the idea of it being exclusively registry operators came to the fore. And then due to some of the survey mechanics, it was unclear if you added so-called experts, say, from IATF or RIRs or some other technical group, but not other stakeholders. I think general conclusion I had, while it was not entirely clear, is that that also created significant differences of opinion. So viewing it merely as kind of a mouthpiece for the customers is I think a little bit reductive. The more that it's solely about technical discussions, I think the more comfortable people get with it being predominantly registries and not multi-stakeholder or in a balanced fashion. But it's, in this case, somehow we have to balance structure and function. I think there's, I for one am uncomfortable with an organizational structure that has the CSC leaving other stakeholders aside from registries with their nose pressed against the glass of the CSC. I'll call on Alan Greenberg.
Thank you very much. A couple of things.
if memory serves me correctly, the IETF existed before it came under the auspices of ISOC. And there's a large difference in having a mature organization with rules sort of taken in, given that get into the relationship it has with ISOC, then something being created. There's a culture. There's a whole background that forces it to stay on the same path. A huge number of people involved, and that's not going to be here. So I think we have to be really careful about that. The issue of being within ICANN or within the IANA operator or under the auspices is really problematic if you're looking at separability. I mean, at the very time when you're considering separation from either the original one, if it's ICANN, or the next one, the group that's effectively pushing and making the decision and identifying the problem is a part of the organization that you've now deciding you don't trust anymore. And that's really problematic. If we're doing this whole thing because we don't, in the first instance, trust the ICANN board, then how do you know the CSC is going to remain true to its origins if it's essentially being managed by the ICANN board that you don't trust? So, you know, we're going into an awful lot of this because we're starting off on the premise that under certain times there are certain entities we cannot trust, and then you're saying let's just make it a gentleman's agreement that they'll do it properly. And I think really talking about bifurcation, I think that's almost the definition. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. To respond briefly and then go back to Martin and then Avery, I think there are some useful distinctions that have been made in the conversation the last few minutes that I think, to my mind, allay some of the concerns that you raised. First, you know, talking about the independence of IETF and its relationship with ISOC, I think that saying that a CSC that had that relationship to ICANN would be managed by the ICANN board, I don't come to that conclusion in any way, shape, or form. Sometimes, and I don't. For instance, I don't think we're being managed by the ICANN board in spite of some appearances that I will the contact we have with the board is let's just say, not a management structure. I think the open structure of this organization, CWG, probably allows the ICANN board more entree into our discussions than a CSC's structure would. But in any case, I think another distinction I thought that was either Martin or Stefan made was having it be a committee of the IFO, the IANA Functions Operator, whoever that is. So I think that actually is consistent with the idea of separability. If ICANN was no longer the IANA Functions Operator, the CSC would no longer be an organized activity of ICANN, to use the term the ISOC uses with IETF or vice versa. It would move along with everything else. It would be specified in the contract, either the contract that exists now or some elements that would be created at the point of separability, depending upon how that part of the model works. So I don't think we would end up with a situation where the IANA functions operation moved to a new operator, and yet the CSC somehow remained a committee of ICANN. I think at that point, that would be peculiar, since I think what we're looking at here is a relationship between the CSC and the IANA functions operator. And I see Robert saying something similar, that tying definitions to the IANA functions operator as opposed to ICANN per se is more future-proof. And probably something to look out for as we talk, if we talk about the IANA functions operator, unless we're talking about something that ICANN would do, whether or not it is the IANA functions operator. Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. I'd actually go back to what you said about this not being exclusively a registry group. And I wasn't assuming one thing or another here. What I was trying to do was reflect back to what the role of what is actually still called a customer standing committee has in the ecosystem of the IANA organizations that we're putting in place. And it seems to me that the whole drive of its role is very much into making sure that the services are being performed technically correctly and according to contract. A whole lot of stuff that actually will not be more widely particularly appreciated or even noticed by other stakeholders. But even leaving that aside, you know, it seems to me that this is the first line of interaction between our new ecosystem and the IANA functions operator, and something that we do need to make sure is effective and works well. And having it as a committee that is within the IANA functions operator seems to me not to be unreasonable, so picking up on Alan's point, because in fact the CSC, if it decides it needs to escalate a problem, doesn't do it itself. It actually goes to the MRC. Therefore, you know, there isn't that conflict within the organization at that stage. However, I go back to say, well, actually, what all this works on is exactly what is the role of this entity, who is it liaising with, who is it working with, what are its key relationships, and if that key relationship needs to be... the structure needs to be designed so that it is as close as possible with the organisations that it is working with. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Just briefly, I would say that when you phrase it in terms of the role, as you did this time, I have more comfort. But I think role and composition are not exactly the same thing. I think that the role can be as you stated, and yet the composition could be somewhat more diverse, as long as the role or the mission remains focused. And I think that is one of the things that we were discussing over the weekend was, you know, to what extent you could some form of a multi-stakeholder seat or seats within the CSC while having it predominantly customer driven and have its mission be narrow enough that there was limits to the, any concern that it would somehow have power that would allow it to go rogue or to do things that wouldn't ultimately that be in the interest of the technical ecosystem, but only in the interest of registry. It's all that elements of checks and balances, and if you say, you know, having to escalate anything of significance that can't be resolved, you know, rapidly to the MRT gives that that as well. So I think that's all very helpful. Aubrey.
Yes, thank you. Aubrey speaking. I want to support the and this is personal support, the view that's being taken that this independent CSE that's under the umbrella of an organization be something that does move with the function if the function does indeed move. In terms of how this can be completely independent and under an umbrella, I would suggest that perhaps we invite in, I mean, I've lived within it for over 20 years, so I believe that it works, but perhaps we should get someone authoritative that really understands it, like Russ or Yari, or even Yana, who's, you know, an IETF liaison to ICANN, to actually come and explain how that independence really is real and does work as something, so that then from there we could go and decide whether indeed this was workable. But to speculate that it would still be subject to the ICANN board, where within the ISOC IETF model, it is most definitely not, except for an appeal mechanism to make sure that there's an external that looks at it. Yes, did you follow your processes? You did. Fine. We have nothing more to say type of thing. But the ISOC board does not determine how it picks its leadership. It does not decide how it does its work. That is totally self-contained within the IETF. Or in this case, in the CSD, could be totally contained within the rules that were written for how it works. So I think it's a model that is explorable, and we should go to the experts who manage that model to perhaps give us a better picture of how that works. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. I think that's an excellent suggestion. I think that I think it is a model that we should, you know, strongly consider replicating, and given that we have experts relatively close at hand, we should figure out how to get them onto a call and or to supply some written explanation, or whatever they're more comfortable to look at that relationship, because I think that may define how we can have an organization that has some existence, you know, tied by a string, but not by a hand making it move, not a puppet string, so to speak. And given that it's worked for IETF, it could well work here. Anything further on this point? I think we've, to some extent, covered a few of these topics, but we'll get off of at least the first one of entity status, unless there are further comments on this. Hearing none, I'll move on to the second point, relationship to ICANN, which I think we've actually now refined as well. It's really the relationship to the IFO, whoever that may be. And again, you know, the proposed response may be that it is similar to the IETF relationship to ISOC, subject to the further clarification. So then brings us, I think, to the next question. Or point, which is the relationship to the MRT. As we said here, that the CSC will take direction from the MRT, report to the MRT, and escalate matters to the MRT. Looking back on this language, which was probably written a little while ago, I feel comfortable with the escalate matters and the report, but not quite as comfortable with the take direction from the MRT point. Any thoughts on that? Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. I'd actually take exception to two things. The take direction from, I think actually it should be taking its direction from predominantly the customers, but also from other input it receives from the wider community, and it should be reporting back to them. Its relationship with the MRT is to escalate matters back to the MRT, and the other relationship it's got is actually with the IANA functions operator, where it should be essentially formulated area where raising issues with the IANA functions operator as a group, it's a preferred venue. It wouldn't be the only venue, but I would actually see one of the key roles of the customer standing committee should be to raise issues, to discuss performance with the IANA functions operator, and that's way, way, way before it should be taking anything up to the MRT, but it should be going out to its customers, the customers, and to the wider community with all the information that it so painstakingly collects and examines. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. I think those are very good points. And I think that, it should be taking direction from the, primarily from the customers and then from the rest of the multi-stakeholder community. And I think rather than reporting and reporting back to them as well, I think there probably is also an informational reporting function, perhaps between the CSC and the MRT, although perhaps not, because that assumes that the MRT is going to be there to receive those reports as a body. And while I prefer to think that the MRT perhaps is more of a sleeper of an organization that only awakes when one of its specific tasks is needed to be performed, and that if it were given monthly reports by the CSC, that it would somehow find a reason that it needed to convene monthly to discuss them. And that, I think, is against the idea of the MRT being periodic as well as ad hoc when escalations occur. So I think if the reports are open and transparent and available to the community as a whole, I don't think there's any special reporting function to the MRT, even informationally, in terms of kind of the monthly good of the order type of report. At least those are my views personally. I think they are by and large consistent with what you've said, Martin. One thing that raises a little bit of concern in my mind is the issue of raising concerns as a group or using this as the primary vehicle for the customers. And that raises, to my mind, two different concerns. One is, it was one of the things that we established and converged on, I think, over the weekend, was that individual customers have the same right and ability that they have now to deal one-on-one with the IANA functions operator, and that there wouldn't be a gatekeeper function with regard to an individual concern. And maybe that is entirely consistent with what you were saying, Martin, but I just want to kind of tease that issue out. And see if it is consistent. I'll get to the second concern, but Martin, I'll come back to you now.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. It is entirely consistent. I said that I would see the CSC as being a forum whereby, in particular, issues could be addressed collectively. For example, individual registries, if they're having specific problems, whether technical or performance level, should, as they now have, the right to go direct and to sort those problems out immediately. Fundamentally, what I'm actually seeing for the CSC, which is where I think it's having a position as a committee to the IANA functions operator, is that it now makes it very close and very easy for it to raise those issues and discuss those issues in detail, bearing in mind that you know, some of those issues are going to be associated with service levels, and you know, increase the service levels, then you increase the cost of the business almost invariably, and therefore having people fairly close to it, recognizing what the trade-off. You know, that is by far the most sensible place to do it, rather than waiting till things get out of hand and it's now being referred up to the MRT for escalatory action. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. I'll go to Stephanie next.
Thanks, Greg. This is Stephanie. I think I agree generally with Martin, but I wonder if it might be worthwhile clarifying the language "take direction from." My sense is that the CSC could have some responsibilities that are both regular sort of monitoring as well as addressing individual issues that were flagged by customers, and that full range of responsibilities would have to be set forth in a charter or some other governing documents, and that is what it should be taking its basic instructions from, which would presumably include the possibility of investigating issues that were flagged by customers. So I think I agree, but just a bit of a clarification.
Hi, everyone. Greg, are you still on the line?
Yes. Sorry about that. I see Martin Boyle's hand is back up.
Okay.
I'm not sure how that happened. It is an error.
Stephanie, it might be helpful if you could I saw some agree to what you had said. Might be helpful if you could and I've put that into the chat as well. I had a little bit of trouble understanding you from an audio perspective. So if you could put some of that in the chat, that would be helpful. From what I did understand sounded good. thank you. I see a will do from Stephanie. Let me come to my second concern, which is a little bit more nebulous, and I think another reason why the CSC, while it is predominantly customer-driven, shouldn't be exclusively, is that the somewhat retired antitrust lawyer in me worries a little bit about the CSC being turned into a union, or to use a more loaded word, cartel of customers that somehow is able to exercise powers over the IANA functions operator that are kind of monopolistic in nature, or to use the more technically correct term, when buyers are exercising such powers, monopsonistic in nature. That, I think, is part of the check and balance that has to occur here. Concerned with, you know, registries kind of using this as a way to get things done in a way that is kind of not multi-stakeholder, to some extent, you know, the narrowness of the remit, as Olivier is noting in the chat. If it's limited to operational and technical concerns, and just whether the job is doing as well as it should be done by the standards that everyone had already agreed to, there should be little, if any, opportunity for anything that might be an exercise of monopsony power. But, you know, nonetheless, it's something that hangs in the back of my mind. We'll also note that it was a question asked or inferred from some of the comments from Christopher Wilkinson on the email list with regard to such concerns. I don't think they're entirely unfounded. I think it can be controlled for if the remit is controlled for and if there is enough of a check and balance from the rest of the stakeholder community. And, of course, transparency and accountability go a long way toward that. Cartels don't work well in the sunlight. They work well in the shadows. So the fewer shadows, the better. Nothing, of course, is perfect. But that is part of what we need to control for. And I think I've stated a few ways in which I think we are, in fact, controlling for it. But if we let it get away from those tethers of transparency, accountability, narrowness of scope, there are dangers there, and including dangers that would bring in outside, would just make things more difficult for all of us to function. I've said my piece on that point. Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. Yeah, I must admit, I hadn't particularly thought of there being that sort of considerations in a committee that is essentially sort of the equivalent to, the sort of passenger user group or the telecoms user group committee, which tries to represent the customer interests with relationship to a monopoly supplier. I'm struggling a little bit to know how we would be able to avoid such accusations and yet have this group perform its job. Because wherever it was located, and no matter what other organizations it brought in with it, essentially, what we're looking for here is an opportunity to raise issues of concern to the supplier, help the supplier address those levels of concern, but obviously where the cartel-type nature of the relationship comes in, that if we don't like what they're doing, we're going to sack them. It's that relationship. And so, okay, can we sort of try and position this in such a way that we understand what is the correct side of the line and what is the incorrect side of the line? Thanks.
Thank you, Martin. I think, to some extent, we avoid those by having a narrow function and having transparency and accountability and having issues that might be more transformative escalated up to the MRT. I think that should allow it to do the CSC to do its job without undue concern. But I think it's a concern that even should be kept in mind by those participating themselves, that they are, are they using kind of group power to achieve something beyond what is, reasonable and even potentially legal. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you, Greg. The issue that you just alluded to, I think, is affected in a significant way by the fact that certainly for GTLDs, and to a lesser extent for ccTLDs or some ccTLDs, there is a completely separate relationship with the current INF functions operator and the one that where the intent is to stay. And you cannot ignore that. It's not only do the registries have some, quote, ulterior motive with regard to the IANA functions operator, to IANA, but is there some ulterior motive with respect to their relationship with ICANN, the current functions operator, over whom they will have some sway in recommending or raising flags that may cause a transfer in the functions operator? We talk about in the accountability group, we're talking about leverage. This is leverage. This is potentially, in the worst case, attempting to affect the relationship that they have with ICANN, which is often not necessarily a fully cooperative one. There's lawsuits, there's contract negotiations, and the ability to try to impact that relationship by using the IANA tool as leverage is something that I think has to be looked at carefully. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I think part of that hopefully goes back to both narrowing its function and its power, how much it can do before it escalates to the MRT, which would be more fully multi-stakeholder. But it is part of it's consistent with my concern as well, Aubrey.
Aubrey speaking. I think that the concern is, I think that's one of the reasons why some suggest that the inclusion of experts in lessens that particular, and I don't know the word, that cartel type of power. And that's one reason why within the expert category, I tend to personally also argue for a expert at the implementation of policy, because they're the ones that can watch and can look out for those areas where you find that, the registries find advantage in not following a policy that has been established by the greater multi-stakeholder, ICANN supporting organizations, and in cooperation with the IANA functions operator, don't follow the policy. And if it is just the customers, they may have an advantage in not seeing a particular policy followed. And that's why there needing to be someone that can also look at that particular thing within the group becomes one more piece of the puzzle that sort of says they're not that power that can corrupt, the function, because there are other experts within the group that can raise alarms. Thank you.
Thank you, Aubrey. I think one of the things that you said when you started talking about policy, I guess the question is, to what extent does this organization really get into, I know it doesn't get into examining policy per se, but what does it even get into necessarily examining or implementation of policy beyond a set of defined operational standards, SLAs, and the like? I'm not sure that it gets into larger issues than that, although that is a question that goes back to Martin's point that we need to look at function before structure. At the same time, we to some extent need to look at structure before function. So this is an iterative process. One of the issues, for instance, to give an example, if this organization is focused solely on SLAs, how is there any pressure or concern or voice or eye on innovation? One answer to that may be that innovation requirements for a certain amount of innovation and, for instance, at the most concrete level, the automation issues. are baked into the contract and therefore are to some extent looked at by the CSC, or maybe it's the MRT that is more based through annual reviews and longer arc processes at looking at things that are a little bit more than technical and operational meeting of standards. But I still think that there may not be an issue here. If this organization is only looking at kind of clear cut, you know, did you get this done in 6 days consistently or not type of standards, there may be less room for the kind of mischief. I don't know, Aubrey, if there's a particular example you might have, and I'm not expecting necessarily you have one or that anyone has one, where there is an agreed-upon standard or level of functioning that would actually benefit the registries if it weren't followed, and therefore, you know, if it weren't enforced, in essence, by the customer.
I don't have a specific example, though, you know, perhaps this is obviously speaking again, answering the question directly, but it is unimaginable to me that such couldn't exist. In other words, we make policy on just about every aspect of the you know, and I'm speaking from the GTLD side, of just about every aspect of the relationship of registries and contracts and such. So and given the whole picket fence nature of the contracts that ICANN has with the registries and the mutability of the relationships and of the SLAs, I just can't conceive of there not being a policy action that could be taken that the registries would not favor, and that would be where the opportunity. So I'm really just talking, and I'm not talking about the broader sense of policy and all policies, and then talking in no sense of making policy, but observing the implementation of it and whether there are any issues.
Greg, this is Grace Abu-Hamid. Stephanie Ducheneau has her hand up.
Thanks. Let me get to Stephanie in a second just to respond directly to Aubrey. I agree with you that there is there are definitely policies or implementations of policy that the registries might chafe under, and that's probably true of any stakeholder group. I guess what I'm getting at more specifically is that they're wondering which ones of those might be, which implementations might be within the remit of the CSC if its focus is on operational and technical functionality. That may be enough if it's, unless there's scope creep, that it may not have anything that it could kind of not enforce. That wouldn't be clearly kind of an abrogation of its duties. If we're just talking about hitting standards. Stephanie.
So, yeah, I'm trying really hard to understand this concern, but I'm having a hard time seeing, given that IANA is not going to be taking directions from the CSC, given that this is an operational monitoring role, given that the CSC isn't empowered to undertake any sort of remedial activity without escalating it or also getting support from the MRT, which is a multi-stakeholder body. I'm having a really hard time seeing what the something that everyone keeps referring to is, what registries would not only be potentially interested in changing by way of the CSC, but empowered to. To me, it's completely unclear.
Thanks, Stephanie. I think you've stated the role of the CSC a little more narrowly than it's been generally understood, in that it would have certain powers to resolve issues. I think early on the analogy of the kind of level one help desk was used, and it's not a monitoring function, that it is the solution, the solver of first resort, if you will, that if an issue has gone off the the INF functions operator is not performing up to the agreed upon standards, that the first attempt to resolve that problem would be made by the CSC. And while I see Bernie commenting in the chat that level one is not much power, it's simply the power to be able to talk to IANA, I would disagree with that to some extent. It's the power that is ultimately backed up by the contract that is being used by the CSC. You know, it is the power that, in essence, any contractor has with its vendor to say, you're not doing your job. And if we can't solve it kind of between you and me, I'm going to have to bring in the next level. And, you know, it may be that you just do get to the next level because you can't resolve it. That's not some threat. The next level is not, you know, coming in with, machine guns. The idea, I think, is to try to resolve operational shortfalls at the CSC level, if they can be resolved, and if they can't, then it gets escalated to the MRT. So there is this power, and it is a power that is, you know, backed by being the contractor. I don't think that this is the CSC is starting to wield more powers. I think this is a power that we've had on its list since day one. So I'm just responding to something I see in the chat. Having the CSC be purely a monitoring function that has kind of that can't communicate concerns back to the IANA functions operator was never really contemplated, or if it was contemplated, was not one around which there was any convergence. I think the ability to react and respond to what it sees is a reasonable power, and I think has always been pretty much on the list since day one as a power of the CSC, but not one that exists in isolation from the MRT or from the contract. Aubrey.
Yes, Aubrey speaking again. One of the things I'd also like to put in the mix is not only the power to act. And I tend to agree with Stephanie that it is unlikely that the CSC would have, you know, the power to affect change in what's being done. But a power that is not being looked at is the power to not act. And if there are policies that are not favored, and those policies are not being followed, it can easily decide to just leave it alone, let it go. We have seen how often the power can be expressed in the refusal to act. And so I think that has to be taken as much into account as an overt activity that we say, no, we can bar against that overt activity. What's harder to guard against is the sort of turning the blind eye aspect of not doing what needs to be done. Thanks.
Greg, this is Grace Abouhamid. Stephanie Ducheneau has her hand up in the queue. Everyone, this is Grace. Just Greg has lost his dial-in, so he says Stephanie can go ahead. And he's dialing back in. Go ahead, Stephanie.
This is Stephanie. I see what's being raised by Aubrey, but I still think that registries have the strongest incentive here to make sure that that type of monitoring and that type of performance is taking place. But I think what we're looking at is both how we're setting forth the requirements and also the scope limitations of all groups involved. So.
Hi, everyone. Just to remind you of what Greg wrote in the chat, he lost his audio and he's dialing back in. If there's anyone who...
I'm back on.
Oh. Donna's in the queue, Greg.
Let me turn off my secondary speakers. Donna off.
Thanks, Greg. So apologies to everyone because I joined this call late, so this may have come up already. Okay, so we need checks and balances. We need to find a way to do that. But what I'd really be interested to understand is that the CCTLDs have had a long relationship with Diana and dealing with issues of performance. And they have set up, my understanding is, a reasonable process for monitoring the IANA performance. So if there's any CCs on the call that could give us some, you know, direction or instruction as to how that has gone and what processes they had in place, maybe that could be instructive for us in terms of what the CSC could do. In terms of setting up checks and balances, I guess if you want somebody from ALAC or a secondary person to be sitting on the CSC to monitor what the CSC is actually doing, and if there's a flag that comes up that is of concern, then you know maybe they take that to the MRT or they try to discuss it with the CSC. But I really think that the CSC is about monitoring performance. I understand that maybe, you know, GTLD registries could get carried away with themselves and, you know, in order to get a reduction in fees, threaten to take IANA out of ICANN, but I don't, that really is an edge case. But I just wonder, we seem to be making this more complicated than it needs to be. So can we get some instruction from how the CCs have dealt with IANA over the years and maybe take some direction or instruction from that? Thanks.
Thank you, Donna. Speaking of CCs, I see that Stefan has his hand up.
Thank you. And Donna, I can't answer for all the business. I haven't been around that long, but I'll give it a try. And what is sure, we had the survey within the CC community noticing that there is a huge trust in the IANA operations functions today. And this is, of course, the main issue for the interest. I've been arguing a bit here now to isolate purely operations oversight of the IANA functions, just to not have it being captured by policy decisions, etc. So because and this was up in Frankfurt meeting as well, was quite clear. I hope that the aim of this is to define the CSC as a purely technical oversight of the IANA functions, avoiding policy altogether. And in my view, at least, that's the reason why we need an MRT. I'm not sure if I answered to your expectations, Donna, but this is the main line all along. We need to make it very minimalistic, and in combination with the automation of the update of root zone, you may decentralize policy decisions to each and every TLD, making it less vulnerable and for takeover or capture. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. Bernie.
Thank you, Greg. I think I was the original leader from the CCTLDs at the time when we started working with IANA about performance quite a few years ago. And I can speak to that for a few seconds in relation to Donna's question. I think that initially there were some reticence from IANA, and eventually as we started working together, and I guess with support from management and the board as to just the concept of us doing that with IANA, I think we ended up with a very productive environment. The IANA folk were extremely practical. They were extremely clear in their limits of what they could discuss, what they couldn't discuss, how it might be reasonable to look at some things. And I guess overall, I can just call it a really collaborative and effective collaboration with IANA. And I think the question Donna was asking is that I'm hoping that what we're talking about from a CSC point of view would be that same kind of thing. I don't know if that helps. Thank you.
Thank you, Bernie. Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. I'd sort of certainly echo a lot of what Bernie's just said. I put my hand up because I thought it was also perhaps useful to flag that centre, which is the European CCTLDs Association, regularly has meetings with people from the IANA team. And if it's not every meeting, every one of our main meetings, at least it's probably two out of three. And that does provide quite a good forum for airing issues and concerns. But I'd actually go back and say several years ago, and certainly before I joined Nominet, the quality of performance from the IANA functions operator was pretty bad. And I certainly attended at least one meeting between a representative from the IANA functions operator and center, where it was very, very clearly put over that there were issues and what those issues were. Now, I think that sort of goes back to that sort of earlier point that the CSC should not be the only route in to registering concerns on performance, but it is just one, and that these issues can be raised through a multiple set of routes, of directions. And that sort of led me then to think that certainly for center discussions that we had with the IANA operator appear in publicly available minutes, I go back to one of the key roles of CSC is to be a bridge into the IANA functions operation, and the committee itself should not be seeing itself as having a role, an identity, independent of everything else, but should be communicating with the outside world and with the IANA functions operator and documenting what it is doing. So I think that might actually, to some extent, respond to Avery's concern about the policy, or rather ignoring things that are inconvenient. There might be very good reasons for doing it, but if you are going to do it, you ought to at least document why you're going to ignore a particular concern. or a particular thing that is apparently going wrong. And then my last point is my point about policy and changes of policy. I think this is the most dangerous area of the whole of our monitoring of the IANA functions operation. We need to have clear separation between the organizations that are defining the policy and the operation of the policy. And if the IANA functions operator is deviating from the policy, that is a complaint. However, the CSC or any other of the structures here should not be taking on themselves the role of writing the policy or developing policy or applying policy that hasn't been agreed through its due process. Thank you.
Donna Austin has her hand up in the queue.
Thanks. Before I get to Donna, Martin, I think that was very well stated and consistent. It looks like Donna took her hand down. That was, I think, had been an old hand since I'd been kind of operating around it. I see a comment in the chat from Sean. All I expect CSC will be doing is monitoring performance based on specific indicators as defined in the SLA. So I will expect that CSC would discuss with IANA only when they observe that IANA is below the agreed level of performance, and when and if the IANA operator refuses to comply after after a specific timeline or reminder or notice or some form of period of resolution, then they would escalate to the MRT. Now that seems consistent with what we're discussing here as well. Alan Greenberg.
Thank you. With regard to Sean's comment just now, I think we also previously said that the CSC might be the body that discusses with IANA the potential for new service levels or changes or new things being monitored. So I'm not sure that makes a substantive change, but I believe that we did discuss that as well.
Right, Alan. I think that's a good point. That was a point I was trying to get at also with, who is pushing for innovation, and is innovation in essence a service level if you bake it into the contract? Not so much a service level, but you should. I think the current contract does require IANA to continue to look for ways to improve and not to just stand pat. I don't think I have problems with that role as long as it is aimed toward technical, functional, operational improvements. There's always the concern of scope creep and using that to achieve broader ends. Martin, I saw a hand up and then it went down. I don't know if...
Greg, it's Alan. I didn't raise the issue to say there was a conflict. I was just making sure that Sean's comment did not get captured as the sole purpose.
Yes, and I agree. Not trying to see conflicts where there is none, but just stating that the power you give the CSC to act kind of its own initiative, as opposed to react to a performance problem, does give it a little bit more responsibility, I would say. Alan, is that a new hand?
Yeah, it is a new hand.
Yes.
I guess I don't quite agree with what you just said. I think it has to be part of the responsibility because part of the monitoring job is recognizing that there is a problem, but it's not being reflected in the current service levels that are being reported.
Right.
So
I would actually agree with you, and I think that it is
that part of the job.
Yes. Thanks, Alan. I would agree, and I think that is an appropriate area for the CSC to be active in. Just raising, maybe it's lawyers are just always peeling onions and making everybody else cry. somehow without crying themselves. Apologize for that. So I think we're seem to be in violent agreement, more or less. Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. I'd just like to very firmly underline that because, and going back to the concept that perhaps the CSC's best place is as a committee within the IANA functions operator, that it wouldn't necessarily be just purely for where things go wrong. But also perhaps looking out for potential difficulties coming up. And, for example, in the case of new actions, new activities coming on stream, as, for example, DNSSEC a few years ago, talking with them about the implications that rolling out a service like that might have on the total delivery package. So, you know, let's try and step back a little bit from it only being things going wrong, but actually a way of making sure that everybody understands the way that this service is going, how it might evolve, and in particular that we are all making it very clear to the wider world the things that are happening, and with that, I think it puts the CSC into a very, very much better position as a communicator rather than an ultimate decision maker whose only tool is a stick.
Thank you, Martin. Very well said. I think I see some agreement in the chat as well. I personally agree with that as a very good kind of summary on both a functional level and a kind of a conceptual level of how CSC's role should be viewed. Anybody disagree or want to comment further on this point before we move along? Okay, great. Looks like we can move along. Move along to the organizational documentation question, which we answered before, that there would be a charter with a clear and limited mission statement, principles and limitations for the CSC's performance. Any further comments on that? I see we're now collecting humor/good lines in the notes. Hopefully we'll compile that at the end, the wit and wisdom of the CWG. Any comments? Martin Boyle.
Well, it's good to know that after several months we have one humor/good line. Perhaps we'll have a few more by the time we've finished. I'd put my hand up because you said, well, you know, we decided on a charter some time ago, and obviously I missed that because I'm not quite sure I know and understand why specifically a charter, and would have thought that the sort of framework in which a committee is going to be working will depend on whether it be a charter, whether it be a terms of reference. Essentially, I think, so this is just a question to you, Greg, by charter, do you just mean terms of reference and modus operandi?
Thanks, Martin. I think it's closer to terms of reference. It's, I guess, not a term that I tend to use in my day job, but kind of looking quickly at how one would define terms of reference, which the internets tell me describe the purpose and structure of a project, committee, meeting, negotiation, or any similar collection of people who have agreed to work together to accomplish a shared goal. Thank you, Wikipedia. I would say yes. And if a charter is intended to distinguish, I guess I'd come back to you, Martin, and ask how you would distinguish that from a charter. I'm not saying it's not distinguished, but I'm just trying to, if we kind of clarify the difference, it may help us understand something more about how we're looking at this organization. And then I'll get to Stefan after Martin.
Okay, Greg. Martin Boyle here. Yeah, it's because I'm not quite sure I understand the scope of a charter that I asked my question. If you say a charter is quite simply its terms of reference, that's something I feel quite comfortable with as the basis on which a committee works. Because I'm seeing this as a committee still, but it's what extra might a charter be bringing to it? If nothing, then I'm quite happy just noting that it's it means the same thing.
Thank you, Martin. I'll note that the next sentence of Wikipedia, and I'm not looking at Wikipedia as the answer to all things, but it actually is quite helpful. The next sentence says the terms of reference of a project are often referred to as the project charter. So I think there is kind of a convergence there of terms. And I guess when I think of charter, I think of it as a kind of founding or foundational document for the creation and setting of, in essence, terms of reference. So there is kind of a foundational aspect to a charter. And maybe that's why I've tended toward that word. But I think we're probably beating that point to death. Stefan Johnson.
Thank you, Greg. Well, being not a native English speaker, I'm too ignorant to know the nuanced difference between charter and terms of reference in English. However, the importance is, of course, to define the role of the CSE as we've been talking about it today. So maybe there should be an addendum, something explaining what we actually mean with charter or terms of reference, if that's the case. So maybe we need to have a written definition. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefan. Conscious of that both English speakers and especially those for whom examining pieces of language is a part of their day job might get further down in the weeds on these sorts of things. I think whether it's a charter or terms of reference, it's kind of converging on the similarity between those two, which is basically something that sets up this committee and gives it its marching orders, to put it in more colloquial terms. Sean.
Yeah, this is Sean. Thank you, Greg. I just want to clarify on the process that will be involved in reviewing the SLA. Will it be the sole role of CSE to actually negotiate the SLA with the IANA operator? For instance, I'm just using the scenario of the current numbers proposal, for instance, where they will set up the assessment of a review committee for SLA. However, the review committee is going to be advising the NROEC on any improvement requirements. So I want to be clear about the role of CSE in any updates of SLA. Are they going to be the ones to be negotiating that with the IANA operator? Just like, for instance, also another example is the one of the IETF, which is normally annually negotiated with by the IAOC, the IETF Administrative Oversight Committee. So is that also going to be part of the role of the CSE, apart from just identifying, because from my understanding, I thought identifying needs for improvement and then recommending getting MRT to actually do the job of negotiating that with the IANA operator was one of the things I thought was the major process that was in place before. So thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Sean. It's a good question. I don't think it's one that we've come to, and certainly not in this discussion today. We've been looking at the CSC as more the body that would take the SLAs once they are agreed to and monitor through reports and other things the adherence, the quality of performance against those the SLAs. I think when it comes to negotiating the SLAs, maybe it's a different question.
Okay, so that means that because I'm trying to clarify, I made a point before that the major role of CSC in this context is that they're going to be monitoring performance and they're going to be escalating issues. So there was the other role that Alan added, which I thought was actually related to negotiating SLA improvements. So if I get you.
Hi, everyone. This is Grace. This was probably Sean's audio that's dropped. We will redial him immediately, but I would suggest moving on to the next person just in case. It takes a few minutes to dial him back.
Thanks. He's indicated he lost audio now. Do we lose the lost audio sound as well? Thank you. We'll wait for Sean to get back in. Any other comments on this point? I guess I would look at it this way, which is that if the CSC is not just responding to performance issues, but is also raising potential improvements, which could also lead to changes in SLAs and the like, is that something that's accomplished solely by the CSC, or does that get referred up to the MRT, which is responsible, at least in the Frankfurt model, for any amendments to the contract, and the SLAs are really ancillary to the contract. It would seem to me that it may make sense for that to go back up to the MRT if there's going to be a change in SLAs or in the way that the performance is actually carried out. Automation or something we can't even imagine yet because the technology is not there yet. Maybe something related to the Internet of Things or whether that should be just dealt with by the CSC. Any thoughts on that? Like Sean has just typed in that his point is a similar understanding. I'd like to clarify Alan's point about CSC doing beyond just monitoring performance. Sean, we have you back in audio. Do you want to continue? I don't know if you heard my question to the group.
Yeah, I didn't hear your question. So what I was trying to clarify is if there is need to improve XYZ in the SLA, I expected that CSC will only take note of that need for improvement, and after a certain period of time, maybe annually, as it is done in the IETF, they recommend that to the MRT, who then negotiates with the IANA operator on how to improve on that. That is how I understood it. But I would like to be clarified on whether CSC is not actually going to be doing such recommendations to the MRT, but we actually be negotiating such improvements with IANA operator directly. That's what I need to get clarification on. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. I don't think that's entirely a settled point. So I see Siva saying that neutral observations related to technical efficiency could be implemented without procedural bottlenecks, and Donna saying that primary customers should be able to identify new service levels that are considered necessary. I agree with both of those, and I guess the question is whether those should actually become, whether those changes should actually take place without any, which in essence are amendments to the contract or to the service levels agreement, which is ancillary to the contract, without the MRT being involved. I guess my assumption going in would be that the MRT would take care, that would have to go up to the MRT to actually be taken care of. But that's a that's an assumption, a rebuttable assumption. Sean, I don't know if that's a new hand. If not, let's go to Alan Greenberg.
Yeah, thank you. In my mind, the change to a service level would have to come at a contractual level, and that would go through the MRT. There's no question about that in my mind. But to evolve to the point where we've identified what the new change will be and the recommendation will be, it only, in my mind, it makes sense that the CSC and people from the CSC should be talking to IANA. The alternative is the equivalent of a management structure where you can't talk to a peer. You have to talk to your boss, and your boss will talk to their boss, and then it'll go back down the level there. And it makes no sense not to have a direct discussion between the IANA and the CSC to try to come up with a recommendation that would both be what the registry operators want or need and what IANA can produce. So that kind of interaction, I think, has to be there, although they don't have the legislative ability to put it in place. So I think we're talking about halfway between the two discussions.
Alan, thank you. I think I find myself in complete agreement with what you just said in terms of, you know, process plus, you know, versus kind of contractual slash legislative ability to implement a change in the contract. Any other comments, questions on this point? Sean, is that a new hand? It's not. Okay. Moving along. Any other comments on kind of organizational documentation, whether we call it charter, terms of reference, or whatever? I think fairly straightforward at this point. We have 10 to the hour. So just looking at the next point, transparency seems to be one everyone pretty much, you know, agrees on, subject to issues of confidential information. And things that just can't be published. Martin Boyle.
Thanks, Greg. Martin Boyle here. Yeah, it actually goes to the bit in square brackets in the previous section, and it then reappears here on transparency. And it's a simple question. It goes back to your earlier comment about closed relationships. Would there not be some cause for concern for the IANA functions operator sharing confidential information on a confidential basis with this particular committee? You know, it seems to me there, as soon as you've moved into the nobody knows what you're getting up to, that you start getting questions of propriety. So I'd like your views on that in the light of your earlier comments about cozy relationships. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. You know, good point, and I think it does come up in relation to confidential information and the like. And this is why I think having some multi-stakeholder component and neutral expert component within the CSC gives a lot of comfort that things won't get too cozy and that things won't get done in the shadows that shouldn't be done. I think Clearly there is certain information that is confidential, that is you wouldn't want published all over the place about IANA functionality and the like. I understand there's at least one non-public report, and there are other non-public aspects, such as the disaster recovery plan, that you don't just necessarily want published. Anything that was, say, an analysis of the weaknesses of the infrastructure and the ability for it to be hacked, you wouldn't publish that necessarily. No roadmaps. So that's kind of my thinking, and part of it, one of the things you often try to avoid is the appearance of impropriety. And so that by being transparent and by having some multi-stakeholder component where kind of publishing-type transparency isn't available, I think goes a long way toward avoiding appearances of impropriety. Alan.
Thank you. I, of course, am not at all privy to what the confidential reports include. There was allusion to that they include certain problem reports and identify the registry. If that is indeed the case, then we have a significant problem that even obfuscating who the registry is, you may well be able to tell who it is based on the details of the problem, and that may be releasing competitive information or information about registries to their competitors. And that would be a significant problem that isn't fixed by keeping it open or having other people watch. But I may be completely off track about not knowing what these reports are about.
Thanks, Alan. I don't know if anybody else has any kind of point of information on what the confidential report that's produced by IANA is.
By the way, Greg, can I ask, why don't we have an IANA person in this group who can actually answer questions about IANA?
You know, that's actually a hell of a good question. Heck of a good question. I was thinking that at some point along the way myself, is that we should have some sort of a expert function. Let's put that in the notes, and I think it would be helpful to have somebody on these calls from IANA, or at least on TAP.
Yeah,
I guess maybe there's...
I have a comment in the chat I want to read out.
It says something, real issues that happened in the last month. Oh, Alan, Chuck did mention the conflict of interest requirements this last weekend. And apparently there's real issues that happened in the last month. Alan with two L's says to Alan with one L, an excellent suggestion. Conrad, I guess David Conrad is always reading the notes. And Yop has done that in the past. Knows IANA, but knows not from it, but knows it well. So, any case, the more resources we have here, because there are sometimes when we need more or less information about kind of IANA from the inside. Or from those who are more inside. But I think bottom line point, now we're five before the hour, is that nothing that should be done here should kind of undermine the actual operations, or there shouldn't be anything written in here that kind of forces things out into the open in a way that's cavalier or that's against kind of just good operational process for IANA. I think these things can be dealt with along the way just by people being some level of sensibility and flexibility. Grace, I see your hand is up.
Thank you, Greg. This is Grace Abu-Hamid for the record. I'm just wondering if your ask is if you want staff to go and ask for someone from the IANA team to join RFP3 calls, or if you're just looking for an observer. Is there an action associated to the item or not? I'm just trying to figure out how exactly you want to take that forward related to the IANA.
I think that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure whether we'd want an IANA person listening to all of these calls. On the other hand, these are open calls, so they're perfectly capable of doing that whether we ask them to or not. So I guess the answer would be, ideally, yes, to have them kind of here to provide kind of expert guidance. If there's anybody who thinks that they again, we can't stop them from being on, even if we say we are not particularly interested in that. Any thoughts on that? I think, you know, ideally, I would say, well, yeah, let's have them on. Robert Guerra, or Jarrah.
I just think I think it would be particularly helpful, but I think we just need to be do it in a proper way. And so we had, I think, an RFP 4 or maybe earlier RFP 3 conversations. I see this almost as asking for legal advice. We should define the questions that we have. If there's a scenario or a description that we want, we should articulate and phrase that and develop that in advance. First pose it to, you know, those on the group. Yeah, from the SAC is more knowledgeable about that than I am, and maybe others. And then whether it's ICANN staff or itself or, NTIA if we want them. But I think we just need to, we are talking about their roles, and so I think there needs to be some separation independent. So I would refer questions to them, but having them engage in the conversation, I think a point would not necessarily, in my view, be the best thing to do.
Thanks, Robert. So I guess there's basically two different approaches here, and I think maybe we need to think about them. It's Friday. We actually have another call Monday later in the day. So we have a little time to think about this. I note that for Donna Austin and others on the west coast of the U.S., we will have a better time for this call. Unfortunately, I also note for those in the U.S., it's a federal holiday, so not normally a work day, so that's a double-edged sword. But let's take these two kinds of thoughts offline, which is on-the-call involvement versus bringing questions back. I think at a very minimum, we should have a more open line or point of contact to IANA and to the IANA functions operator within ICANN to get questions. And we should think about as we go through the course of this, trying to make sure that we collect those points of information to get them answered. And at most, we can think about whether we would want to have them on RFP 3 calls or on certain designated RFP 3 calls. Let's just kind of take the question. It's to some extent similar to the way some people want to work with lawyers by having them on every call, which gets very expensive and sometimes boring for the lawyers, or come back to the lawyers afterwards, which sometimes leaves the lawyers kind of wondering what really was discussed, because the report back is not the same as being able to respond in real time in the back and forth of an animated discussion. So that's to some extent open question. Let's think about that. Grace's hand is up again, probably because it's 11 o'clock.
Sorry, Greg, that was an old hand.
It's an old hand, but a good reminder nonetheless that we are at the top of the hour, the end of the call. So I think, although it may not seem entirely that way, I think we've made a lot of good progress on this call. We have our next call on Monday, and the exact time, Grace, is?
It's 2100 UTC to 2300 UTC.
Right, and we've moved that later, and I think we are going to be having the Monday RFP 3 calls in that slot. To allow for a little bit more time zone diversity. I think if there's nothing further right at the moment, we'll look to continue along these lines on Monday's call. The CSC structural analysis document continues to be posted in Google Docs, of course, and I would ask that those on this call or reading these notes afterwards go to that document and make any comments on the remainder of the document that would be helpful in Monday's call as we roll through on these points. And as well, we'll try to capture everything that went on in this call and bring it back into that document as well. So with that, I will bring this call to a close and ask that the operator stop the recording.